You are listening to The Scroll, an audiobook about Ecclesiastes written and read by Vance Neudorf. Chapter 5. The spicy aroma of a lamb stew emanating from a ground floor apartment sharpened Kohelet's hunger as he slowly climbed the stairs to his room. He had been so busy at Eli's fruit stand he hadn't eaten all day, and with each step his anticipation of what Benjamin might have collected for supper grew stronger. Neither he nor Benjamin had learned to cook, so each evening Benjamin went out to barter with the vendors in the alleys around the market. At some point, after sundown, he would return with their evening meal, a veritable feast of marketplace fare. Their supper meal was a highlight of Kohelet's day. Even the best chefs of the palace could not compare with the culinary expertise of the marketplace immigrants, and their access to the freshest ingredients. The best produce and meat coming into the city did not make it up to the king's table. The merchants reserved the finest for their own use, for the upper crust of the city ended up with the next highest grade. He chuckled at that thought, that even now someone in the palace feast might be eating an orange that had rolled through the marketplace mud that very day. But an empty apartment greeted Kohelet, and that meant Benjamin was once again caught up discussing the news of the day. That was one downside to Benjamin's daily quest for supper. The man visited with everyone he met. When he was this late, meant there must be some important news that everyone was talking about. Kohelet set the coins and figs on the desk and eased his aching body into his chair. After a day of physical work, he felt his advancing age in every move. He leaned back and closed his eyes. Fatigue was quickly overpowering hunger, and if Benjamin was gone much longer, he would just eat a few figs and crawl into bed. The oil lamp on the desk flickered and almost died. He adjusted the wick with the back of the reed pen, and the flame flared up and pushed away the shadows. Not every home in this corner of the city could afford to keep a lamp burning at night, but thanks to Benjamin's connections with the olive oil vendor, they were able to enjoy the comfort of light long into the evening. Benjamin continually reminded him how the cool of the day was also a great time to write. And to make his point clear, Benjamin had placed the scroll Kohelet was writing at the top of the desk next to the ink and pens instead of storing it away in the leather bucket overhead. Perhaps that was the real reason he was so late with their supper. Now that the scroll had been started, supper might be coming even later, especially if he did not add any new thoughts. A large fly, heavy with feeding on the carcasses in the market, buzzed loudly through the window and dropped clumsily onto the desk. It rambled toward the lamp, its shadow pursuing it into the wide crack that ran across the surface of the desk. Kohelet ran a finger along that crack. It was such a shame that the top of the desk had split apart. The sturdy piece of furniture had been Kohelet's work desk for many years at the king's library. It had been imported from beyond the eastern border of the kingdom, but the dry air of Jerusalem had proved more than the exotic wood can handle, and a hairline crack across the surface had gradually opened into a wide fissure. When it had been time to move into the new library, the chief steward had refused to take Kohelet's cracked and stained desk along. The king was not going to see anything less than perfection at the grand opening. He had ordered Benjamin to dispose of it, and the Ethiopian giant had dutifully hoisted the heavy desk onto his back and hauled it from the palace precincts. It wasn't until Kohelet was forced to relocate at the market that he discovered Benjamin had saved the desk and stored it in Esther's fish shop. On hot summer nights, the scent of fresh oil still rose from its surface, but that oil had also served to seal the wood and stop the crack from getting any wider. The bottom right corner of the desk gleamed in the lamplight. Here the sleeve of his robe had gently polished the wood with each word he had etched onto a scroll. 227,000 words, to be exact, for in those days he had taken great pride in his work and had kept a careful tally of his accomplishments. Not that he could ever prove it, for his record book had been left behind on the night they fled the palace. Running down from the top of the desk was a long, dark stain where a young assistant had spilled a jar of ink and ruined an original scroll. Kohelet cringed at the memory. His anger had burned against that boy, and he immediately dismissed him for his incompetence. He never saw him again. But later Benjamin saw the same boy for sale in the slave market. Kohelet traced the path of stain and shook his head. If only he had understood back then that people were of much more value than things such as tables and scrolls. That lesson had been learned only when his own life was split in two. For the first part, he had not cared much about people, only about his work and getting as much done in a day as possible. He had lived in blind servitude to the belief that if he worked hard, he would get ahead, move up the ranks, and make something of himself. He had believed that perfection in work was an honorable goal, and that through hard work he could control all the problems that kept coming his way. Like the desk drying out until the fibers could no longer hold together, his own life had split in two when he discovered just how expendable he truly was. One moment he was running the library, and the next he was down here in the market, just like the boy who had spilled the ink. Justice may have been better served if he too had been sold as a slave. His stomach rumbled, and he looked at the bowl of figs. These were likely the finest figs in all of Jerusalem. Why save them for tomorrow when they were the reward for his labor today? He rolled one between his thumb and forefinger, squeezing it gently and feeling the plump resistance. A fig was nature's perfection. The velvety soft skin and the sweet pink flesh with its tiny seeds was a true work of art. Taking a small bite, he let the sweet juice trickle down his throat. He relaxed back into his chair and studied the fig with a satisfied boyish grin on his face. He used to steal figs at the palace, even though the palace guards kept a watchful eye on the king's tree during fruit season. He just couldn't help himself. He took a larger bite and savored the sweet flesh. This must have been the fruit that tempted Adam and Eve. Of course, their real goal had been to acquire the knowledge of both good and evil to satisfy their unquenchable desire to become as wise as their creator. Qehelet sucked the last bit of flesh from the stem and tossed the hard nub out the window. Wisdom was like a fig in the sense that it provided nourishment for the time at hand, but as Adam had learned, it did not make you a better person when you pursued it. Used as a guide on your journey, it was a blessing, but when you pursued it as a destination, as something to achieve, it would always disappoint, for you could never rest. There was always more to learn. It had been an extremely difficult lesson for someone who had dedicated his entire life to scholarly pursuits. Pushing the bowl of figs to one side, Qehelet unrolled the scroll and read over his words from that morning. It was a good beginning, but his journey had not ended with his foray into pursuing pleasures and projects. He gazed out at the night sky for a long moment before picking up his pen. So I returned to a reasoned and thorough study of wisdom and folly. Just as the wise ones before me, I too concluded that wisdom provides some benefit, but folly never can. Wisdom and folly are as days to night, for the wise can see where they are going, but the fool stumbles along in the dark. Yet the same fate overtakes them both, so what is gained by being wise? Even the pursuit of wisdom is futile, for in days to come, the wise person, like the fool, will die and be forgotten. Ironically, it was Nabal who fully grasped those words. When Qehelet had offered to instruct him in the path of wisdom, Nabal had replied, "So I can waste my entire life learning and end up like you? Old and poor and living off scraps from the market?" The words had stung, but Nabal was correct in the sense that wisdom could never provide lasting gain. What the rich man was missing, however, was the daily usefulness of wisdom. It might not make you rich, but it could make life better, both for yourself and for those in your family. Nabal's ongoing foolishness and lazy attitude had caused his father Jacob no end of grief. Jacob had worked his way up from owning a small fabric shop in the market to being one of the largest importers of textiles in all Jerusalem. When Nabal was still young, Jacob had moved his family into a larger home closer to the palace, but Nabal still liked to hang out at the market and brag about where he traveled and what he'd seen. Nabal's experiences gave him opinion on everything, and he freely shared it whether you wanted to hear it or not. Most people indulged him, since they respected his father's significant wealth. This past summer, Nabal's father had come to see Qehelet and ask him whether he would take Nabal on as a student and instruct him in the way of wisdom. Jacob had been desperate, for his excessive donation to his fabric business had taken its toll. His heart pained him, and he had been forced to cut short his spring textile excursions to Egypt. Nabal was Jacob's only child, and the thought of his son taking over the textile company and driving it into ruin was etched on Jacob's strained face. He had worked many years to build up a business in hopes that the legacy would carry on through his son, but like many successful businessmen, he had neglected the raising of his children while he built his empire. He had tried to remedy this deficiency by taking Nabal along on trips, hoping to develop in the young man an appreciation for the family business. But it didn't work out as planned, and Nabal had only grown more entitled and arrogant. Although he had no children of his own, Qehelet could understand Jacob's feelings. He had worked tirelessly to increase the king's book collection and build a new library, but now all that work was entirely in the hands of Daniel, a man who loved power much more than literature. As Qehelet wrote, the weight of those long last days pressed down on him. Then I felt as if I had wasted my life because all the work I had done under the sun only distressed me. It was as futile as chasing the wind. I grew to despise everything I'd worked so hard for because I must leave it to my successors. I cannot know if they'll be wise or foolish, yet they will have control over all the work into which I have poured my effort and abilities. My heart filled with despair, for although I worked with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, my estate will be left to someone who may destroy it. This is both futile and a great misfortune. Quellet sighed deeply. He knew many older men who had grown to despise their work in their declining years. Even if their ambitions came to pass, the weight of holding their world together was an increasingly heavy burden. Their answer to the question, "What does a man gain from all his hard work?" was often negative and bitter. He dipped his pen and wrote the words he had heard many of his older friends echo. "So what do we gain from all the toil and anxious striving with which we labor under the sun? During the day, our work is so full of problems and pain that at night our minds cannot rest. How futile is that?" There was an answer, but it was not one those who pursued wealth and success liked to hear. Personally, he had earned more money in the palace than he needed, but he actually slept better now that he had nothing to lose. There was a great freedom in having less. The simple joys of life were in sharper focus now. He reached for another fig and slowly savored each bite. It was even sweeter than the first. He smiled as he dipped his pen into the ink. "I say, the best for us is to eat and drink and enjoy our work. None of us can achieve anything better than accepting those gifts from the hand of God, and by doing so, we also receive wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. The fool, however, works to gather and store up wealth only to pass it on to those who honor God. Pursuing wealth is as futile as trying to catch the wind." Kohelet put the pen down and sat back in his chair. People intent on filling a storehouse of wealth were unaware that their days were slipping by without enjoyment. In a very real sense, the money they were saving had significance only when it left their hands and was passed on to those who used it to find joy in that day. Oddly, it appeared that one had to give up pursuing wealth to actually enjoy a rich life. Kohelet looked out over the city. No doubt there were people out there sitting at a desk and working through the night on their future business plans. A servant would bring them a bowl of fresh figs, and they would absentmindedly eat while they continued to work, not even taking a brief moment to realize that the enjoyment of the figs was the true fruit of their day's labor. The simple pleasures of the day would be lost to them even in the midst of their perceived financial advancement. He eased the chair forward, a smile on his face. He, on the other hand, could fully savor another fig, or two, or three. The door opened and then shut quickly behind him, and Benjamin was at the table before Kohelet could even turn around. Benjamin crouched at his side, the flickering lamp accentuating the deep furrows on his forehead. "There is trouble coming your way, master. Daniel has been courting Mariah, and now she is desperate to locate you." You have been listening to The Scroll, Chapter 5, a story of the writing of the book we now refer to as Ecclesiastes. You can discover more of Kohelet's writings at www.artofwork.ca, bringing ancient wisdom to life. Thank you for listening.